Hello, Internet.
It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Good morning, good evening, good night.
Dave.
Yeah, I may just take a look at my pre-written introductions here. Oh, here's a good one. It astounds me just how bad we are, as a society, at tearing off paper towels without jamming the dispenser.
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
That's a real problem, Dave. I was in... God, where was I? I was in some restroom, and like they had the like tear a single sheet at a time, and it like rotates, but it's under way too much tension. And your hands are wet, and as soon as you touch the paper towel, it just like turns to mush. So you like grab two tiny scraps of paper towel.
I suspect people never really like actually test them. Like, oh, this will work. I could do it when it's dry. No, test it in its actual environment.
I also wondered if maybe this is just a guy problem.
Oh, no. Yeah, women's restrooms have the same problem, yeah.
I also had a sink that didn't realize I existed, so that was fun. But we're going to start everything every week with good. We're going to start everything with good week.
Week.
Yeah.
Ooh, I good need week. A good week. That sounds great. Let's do that.
And Craig's going to start us off.
So I just found out something, guys. Apparently, I'm really into lit RPG. Literature RPG. I think we talked about it before. That's essentially, it's a book or story.
is this like Emma RPG and like Tale of Two Cities RPG?
No. This is where they add game mechanics into the book itself. So you're going to have leveling system that maybe the main character, maybe other characters, depends on the story.
I had a Zelda one when I was a kid.
The main character can see their levels, can see their skills, can distribute points into their stats, into their skills, and watch level ups and stuff like that. But again, this is in book or story form. I knew I'd like those kind of stories because I've read them before. I think I might have recommended before. Worth the Candle is one of the ones, although that sort of it subverts the genre a little bit. But I recently, my good thing for this week is I got into another one. It's called Beneath the Dragon Eye Moons by Silky Myth. It was on Royal Road. You can now get it on Kindle. And I think it's free on Kindle Unlimited. I actually have no idea how Kindle Unlimited works. But anyway, it's about this girl who was human on Earth. Unfortunately, she dies. And she meets a god who reincarnates her onto this other, you know, fantasy world. But she gets to keep some of her memories of Earth. And basically, she's able to leverage that. And of course, she also has really good, I guess she remembers stuff as a baby as well, because she gets that full experience being in the womb and everything like that. And yeah, she gets to leverage in this fantasy world her knowledge of like biology and a couple other things that she didn't quite forget. And yeah, take advantage of that. Everyone on this world does have a leveling up system, though. They call it the system. And everyone has access to their levels, to skills, and they distribute them. They have, like, a whole society built around this, which is part of, like, what really drew me into the story itself. So, anyway, I finished book one today. I did not do my reading for this podcast because I was just reading that. I started it yesterday, and I could not put it down. So it has like 13 books, I think, in the series. I don't know if that's where it ends. I'm just getting into this. This is actually from the recommendation, Mike, we talked about before. I got like a bunch of books, which were different, like lit RPG and progressive fantasy. And I'm like, oh, I want to read a whole bunch of these because they sound cool.
Hold on. This is one of them. Minor correction. Progression fantasy. Progressive fantasy would be probably a little bit different. Maybe some crossover, but...
Is it progression?
Progression fantasy.
Which one is it?
Because they progress. Progressive fantasy would be like political stuff.
No, I don't want that. No.
I mean, you might want that.
Yeah. Well, I personally don't want that. Yeah, progression fantasy. I've read a different story of that, and that one was sort of boring to me, so I did not recommend it. I barely finished the first book. And it did make me want to go back to Mage Errant and realize how good that was.
I am currently rereading Mage Errant.
I'm at book 5 of that, but then I wanted to try this, and now I'm really into this. So, Beneath the Dragon Eye Moons by Silky Myth. Go check it out. If you happen to, if you want to know what Lit RPG is, that's actually not bad. You can read the first chapter on Royal Road, see if it's like, if the writing style is interesting to you, and go from there.
I have a question.
Yeah?
The genre is called Lit RPG.
Yes.
But they're not RPGs, they're books.
The yeah. The RPG mechanics so are part
RPG
of the book.
RPG mechanics, yes.
That's where the name right. comes from.
Yeah.
My issue is that the name is incorrect and misleading.
I can't help that. That's what the genre is called.
Because it should be called, well, it should be called RPG literature. Lit RPG would be a game based on Dickens or Jane Austen. Right? No, I'm serious. Like, it, at least in English, maybe this was...
Right. Literature, RPG. I understand, yeah. Right.
The noun, the main concept, comes after the descriptor in English. Maybe it was in Spanish that they came up with the... I don't know. But, like, if you have a crown and it says yellow-green, it's more green than it is yellow, because green is last.
Hey, Dave, can I pitch something to you real quick?
Never, yes.
For your idea of an RPG game based on classic literature, what about Little Nemo the Dream Master? What if someone made a game based on that?
I don't know how it would
take. And then we'll
RPG
call it RPG
form,
Lit. We'll mess with everything.
Do comic strips count as literature? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So I will point out, progression fantasy is like the main genre that's Cradle, essentially, which I think is, as far as I could tell, it's the best of that genre, which is the problem because I started with the best and it's really hard to get into others. But then Lit RPG is a subgenre of it. It's typically found in serialized fantasy. And there's also, I guess, webcomics. I don't know if they fall under the Lit RPG as well, but I've read and seen a few of those where they have RPG mechanics. In webcomic form.
A lot of isekais are lit RPG.
Yes.
A lot of crossover.
Craig, who's the USS Enterprise captain from Star Trek The Next Generation?
Picard?
What's his full name?
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Okay.
What am I saying
that's
wrong?
The only question I had.
Dave, you're really... Okay, look. I know it's all fun to make fun of me pronouncing things, but I feel like you're getting a little bit worse. Like, yeah, I'm going to pronounce things wrong. It's my thing.
I was trying to do it subtly, but I failed, so I apologize.
At least I'm not saying Mario. So you're welcome.
At least I'm trying this thing I just said.
I'm trying for my daughter's sake to say Mario. It's hard, and sometimes I don't.
For your daughter's sake? Because you're afraid she's going to get teased at school for... mimicking you is like
I mean, yeah, you gotta say things properly.
Okay, that's Tori, that's a concern, but that's not the primary concern. The primary concern is that Craig's own daughter will dunk on him regularly for his pronunciations.
Maybe
you do not know cruel mocking until it comes from a child. They will hurt you.
Your own child.
Oh, that's worse. But no, children will find out what the thing you're insecure about, and they will zone in on it.
So, Beneath the Dragon Eye Moons by Silky Myth. Okay, Dave, you're up.
Neat. All right, my good thing this week is a music album that I found on my favorite music streaming platform that doesn't give us money to advertise for them. And the name of that album is Wingspan, original video game soundtrack, by Powell... There's some Polish letters in this name, and I do not know how to pronounce them. It's like Paul Gorniak or Powit. How's the thing? The thing that looks like a cross. It's like an L with a little slasher. Is that like an L or a T? I don't know. But Paul something Gorniak is the composer, and great, relaxing, just piano. I think the game's like a card game or something. I don't know. I watched someone play the game once. Not really. I would probably like the game if I played it, but it's like a card game that's based on birds. But I don't know. But it might be a good game. The soundtrack's really amazing.
I know many people who enjoy the game Wingspan. The biggest thing I know about it is that there is a card for the Roseate Spoonbill, which I know of because of the Game Changer episode of Dropout where Brennan Lee Mulligan.
That's so good.
I've seen that game
at the store, and it looks really cool just from the box. Apparently, there are eggs.
Yes, there are eggs. It's a good game, in my opinion, but apparently the expansion fixes some of the problems that some people have with the base game.
Oh, and also there's a version of it that's dragons instead of birds.
Yes, and there's also a Pokemon version, too, that you can play on Tabletop Sim. So if you're into Pokemon, you could try it out.
But is it actually a physical card game that they made into a video game?
I didn't know it had a video game.
Yeah, I'm
to
talking
it.
About
yeah,
a
it's,
physical
it
game.
Was it's an actual board game.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That it was well, the board game first, and then they made a PC version and whatever.
Yeah,
mobile version,
which has a great soundtrack.
Yeah, I have it. We could play it sometime, Dave. I have the PC version as well as the physical. But if you want the soundtrack, we could play the PC version.
Or we could play the physical version and listen to the soundtrack while we play.
Yeah, that works.
What if they made soundtracks?
World of infinite possibilities.
What if they made soundtracks for physical board games? Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
That would be good. I have this game called Nyctophobia, which is great for October. Because the idea is that you're wearing blindfolds, and so someone grabs, one of the soundtracks to whatever, Friday the 13th or something, and just plays that, and it's great. Really atmospheric.
You could just be like, hey, Google, play the Wingspan soundtrack.
Tori's trying. You're going to make us lose all of our listeners. Or maybe gain them if they like the soundtrack.
Oh, neat. Hey, just this once, my phone didn't explode when I tried to access Craig's home Google. Sounds like Dave's done, so I guess I'll go now. So my good thing this week is something that I posted to the Good Things channel at some point in the past, I think in this past week. It is a YouTube channel called Chris and Jack.
Yes!
Craig apparently recognized them from something called Dorm Life that I'm not familiar with. But also, the Jack in question is Jack DeCina, who was the voice of Sokka in Avatar The Last Airbender.
Sokka! Yeah!
Oh! And Callum in The Dragon Prince.
I've just been rewatching Dragon Prince because new season in December. Actually, there was a new season in July and I was getting caught up.
They do comedy skits that also have like some filmmaking talent attached to them because they are themselves amateur filmmakers. And their chosen vehicle for this is comedy skits. Like the one I linked is called The Perfect Wish to Outsmart a Genie. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it was really good. Thank you for that recommendation. Like, I just binged a whole bunch of their skits. It was so glad to actually see them again. I mentioned Dorm Life. I think that still holds up. I don't know. It was made like 15 years ago or something. So it's going to have certain things that don't quite age, but you could still watch it all. It's on YouTube or whatever. And it's made by the same people, and it's all of them at college. They put on this series, but it's in the style of The Office and other mockumentaries.
Okay,
except in the college dorm.
So I also noticed while going through these that a few people that I've also seen, or at least two people that I've also seen on Dropout stuff, showed up as like side characters. So Jess McKenna has done, I think, like three or four of their shorts. And I am blanking on his name, but he was also in the Welcome to Mountport episode, the singing one.
The musical one, yeah. I looked him up, I forget his name.
Or no, the other one. He played an elf in one of the skits.
Blue? Oh, I thought you meant...
That's Chris and Jack. youtube.com/a-bunch-of-random-characters, because that's how YouTube links work.
That's right. Lou is a half elf.
You know what? Just type in youtube.com/ and then like click a bunch of stuff on your keyboard. You'll probably get to one of theirs. But now it's Tori's turn.
Yes, because we are hopeless shills for the Dropout streaming service. My good thing this week is the new Dropout Presents comedy special. It's Unmedicated by Adam Conover. It was hilarious. I laughed a lot. Highly recommend. Unless you have delicate sensibilities, because he gets a little risque at the end there, but I thought it was fun.
I have not watched it yet. I've planned to, but I kind of got stuck on Time Quangle. Have you watched any of Time Quangle yet?
Nope. I like to wait until they're done.
Oh, you don't have to for this one.
Oh.
Because okay. These were live shows. So, additional good thing, I guess. These were live shows that were recorded during a tour of the UK. I don't know exactly where all they went, but yeah. Live shows that they recorded. Each show, the players would draw a bingo ball to determine which of their characters that they have previously played they will be playing in that session. And then Brennan pulls his own bingo ball to determine the setting. And then they play a like single session game for a live audience.
If I so haven't play... watched all of the D20s that they're coming from, is it still going to make sense?
I had no idea who anyone was, but it was still quite funny.
Well, that sounds delightful.
It reminds me of Hyrule Warriors, where you just take random heroes from different games and combine them into one.
I mean, they're not random. There was a plot.
It's not that. But yeah, no, so it's all of the Fantasy High people minus Lou. I don't know why Lou wasn't there, but it was everybody but Lou.
I believe he shows up in some of the later episodes because I think I saw him on the trailer for it.
Oh, neat. Well, he wasn't in the first one, so. But yeah, so Dropout presents Adam Conover, Unmedicated, and Time Quangle, which is part of the D20. Or the Dimension 20 series. So now we do the part that I don't want to get to.
Are we back to White Sand?
Yeah. No. We're on 21st of the Sunlit Man.
All right. Yeah, we'll do chapters 21 through 25.
A much better story.
I have a surprise for you, Mike, because we're not on 21st of the Sunlit Man.
What?
Oh, let me scroll down here. We're actually on 21st of the Sunlit Man.
Oh. I should have guessed.
All right. Hey, that planet is back. Why didn't the Dawn Shard warp? Oh my goodness.
We're only calling it that from now on. You know that, right?
Edit that out. Oh my goodness.
You know that we can't call it anything but that now.
I'm too embarrassed to go on.
Why didn't the Dawn Shard warp wit? You see, he was already warped long before he adopted the Dawn Shard. Who has the Dawn Shard now? Some powerful weapony person, I suppose. I don't recognize this Simpsons scene or that quote. Dave?
Yeah, so this is the episode where Bart is working for Krusty the Clown, and Krusty calls him on a cell phone while he's in class, and he says, I need to get your fingerprints on a candlestick. Meet me in the conservatory. Chop, chop. And this is kind of... this is what I thought of upon reading that Wit was like, here, Nomad, you grab this Dawn Shard so that when they try to trace people down, they'll find you instead of me.
That is 100% how it went down.
Hey, Craig, here's an opportunity for you to correct Dave on his pronunciation.
Nah, I don't do that. You don't want me to correct someone.
Oh, no. No, we really do.
It's dramatic irony, Craig.
No, it's not. Because I know what's happening.
Is.
If it's dramatic irony, that's when the character doesn't... Forget it.
Are we scrolling more, or are we talking about this?
I guess it could be irony that's dramatic, but... So, like, dramatic
everything
irony
I know...
is when the audience is in on the joke and the character is not.
Everything I know about irony comes from Alanis Morissette.
No.
Soul Siphon Experiment.
No, it's exactly anything in that song is not irony, so therefore I know what irony is, because I know it wouldn't fit in that song. Or is the whole song itself irony, because nothing in the song is irony?
Moving on.
These are deep questions,
soul
guys.
Siphon. I mean, there is an actual, like, real definition for the term irony. I mean, people don't typically use it, so...
It's when something has a bunch of a very particular metal in it.
Yeah, metal. It's irony.
Irony.
Or that's a little bronzy.
No, it's gilded and silver, Craig.
Gilded and silver. My favorite.
All right, Chris's second law. You can use Command/Intent to manipulate Investiture, not unlike how you can use Force to manipulate Matter. And a bunch of notes. Yikes. Dave tries to out-sigzel Nomad. We'll come back to this after chapter wrap-up.
Oh, Rebecca's, I'm looking forward to this.
Rebecca's been here the whole time. Nomad prays for a miracle. Get ancestors!
Okay, right. Back to the top. Hey, that planet is back.
Yeah. The one from the picture. You know, the picture where the planet, like, moved off screen? It's back.
Are you bullying me? Is that what's happening here? Guys, is this Dave bullying me?
I don't know what he was talking about. Not intentionally.
Well, you know how, like, there's always some intention behind chapter headings and, like, the artwork at the start of a chapter? Like, in Tress, we had the, you know...
Oh, no, he's bullying the audiobook listener. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
So, there's this planet, you see, and it's gradually moving along the orbit as you progress through the book, but it's back. Like, it started moving, like, from the top of the graphic down to the bottom, and now it's back toward the top. And I kind of ignored it for a little bit, and I'm not sure if it, like... made a full orbit, or what's going on there?
Oh, I didn't notice that at all.
Yeah, okay. It's moving each time you can watch it.
Why didn't the Dawn Shard warp wit? Are these the same? Do I do both lines? Sure. Okay. You see, he was already warped long before he adopted... They're your bullet points, dude. I don't know if they're separate points or if they're together.
Oh, if they're together, then they'll be together. If there's a space between them.
It's a separate bullet point.
Okay.
But it's also just open discussion time, so you can talk about them together or not talk about them at all. Do whatever you want.
Okay, so, yeah, we get Sigzel talking about, or thinking about what happened with the Dawn Shard and how... Dawn Shard, thank you. And how when it left him, it broke him. It made it so that he has a little bit of its intent stuck to him.
You know, with the new nickname we've given the Dawn Shards. This conversation's taking on a new meaning. I mean, there's a lot worse imagery in everything you just said.
Okay, yeah, no. Go ahead. There's a residue. You know,
rewind 1 minute and listen to that again, keeping in mind Mike's new name for the Dawn Shard.
He can just wipe and wipe and wipe, and it's like he's wiping a marker. There's always something there.
And then when you wash your hands, the paper towels are going to disintegrate.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that there's a slight taint to him now.
It was funnier when you weren't doing it on purpose.
I disagree.
It was funnier for me, which I think by definition makes it funnier for you now.
We'll see when I listen back. If I listen back, I don't know who's editing this one.
Good question.
No one knows. Yeah. So, Nomad just sitting around thinking about stuff. A lot of that in this chapter. Who has the Dawn Shard now? Some powerful weapony person, I suppose.
What does that mean?
Why
would a powerful weapony person have it though?
I assume that he thinks that Nightblood has the Dawn Shard. But I would argue, as I have many times, that Nightblood is a Dawn Shard.
That is your argument.
I never heard you say that.
I would like to clarify that this Dawn Shard wants you to be...
pacifist.
Pacifist, thank you.
Protective-y, or pacifist, yeah.
So I don't know why a weapon... I mean, is this like wax is a weapon? Do you want a weapon to be pacifist? Like, that doesn't make sense.
Whatever I wrote here correlates to the exact... text of the book that I don't have in front of me.
Well, I mean, clearly whatever intent Nightblood has a different intent than this other Dawn Shard.
Yeah, to destroy evil.
The Dawn Shards are commands, right?
Okay,
and
different
the
command.
Shards are intent. Lowercase c, got it. Capital C? Wait a minute.
Whatever, Nightblood has a different one.
Soul Siphon Experiment. So yeah, Nomad has this idea that what if he can suck a little bit of, what's her name? The sister who is Elegy.
Or Elegy? 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 I looked it up. I can't remember.
Elegy.
I think it's Elegy. Yeah, Elegy.
If it's a real word, then it's Elegy. If it's a name that's spelled like a real word but pronounced differently, it would be Elegy.
Well, they have a bunch of different song names. I guess Numihuku Maki Akiai Alunamor named all these characters.
Well, they also named an entire like genre of music after him.
Yeah, ska. It's short for Airskaic Lowlander.
That is a genre of music.
Pick it up, pick it up. Anyway, yeah, he has the idea to just take some of her soul out, because he thinks that she's just like got too much soul now.
I'm sorry, ska is from Skadrial.
Well, yeah, of course it is.
Sorry, ska are from Skadrial. Sorry, go on.
Too much soul. He's doing that thing like, you know, where you've burned your toast and then you just scrape off the burned bit and pretend it's not burnt toast. He's trying to do that. He's trying to scrape off the burnt bit.
Yeah. The ultimate hope for this experiment is that it'll work on Elegy, and then he can try it on himself to take some of his soul away, which is fine. It'll come back. And also take some of the Dawnshard scarring also away so that he is able to fight a little. And now we get to Chrysis's second law.
By the way, it's objectively better to have apostrophe S for a possessive of a name that ends with S, unless it's actually a plural.
I agree.
Because if somebody whose name is... I've known people with the last name John, and I've known people with the last name Johns, J-O-H-N-S. So if you say, if somebody's last name is Johns, and you want to use possessive, J-O-H-N-S apostrophe would actually sound like someone... It's multiple people with the name John and joint possessive.
Well, you can infer from context, you're speaking of.
Yeah, but if there's a better, more clear way to do it, then we should establish that as precedent.
All right.
I'm not disagreeing.
The better, more clear way to do it is to have S apostrophe S at the end of a singular person or thing whose name ends with S.
I think for spoken word, that makes a lot of sense.
Did anybody notice that when Dave made this proclamation that Tori and I both agreed and Craig stayed silent? I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
What? I just said I agree.
Yeah, but you didn't do it in the moment. And that's basically disagreeing.
Right. No, it's not. I appreciate those who give thought to my ideas before agreeing to them. And if they don't agree, I also like to know that they thought about it and have a reason for disagreeing with me so I can reevaluate my position.
Well, what if Tori and I...
But not on this.
What if Tori and I have, on our own time, thought about this enough to already agree with you as soon as you voice it?
That's fair.
That's the case.
Yeah.
I certainly have never thought about this before, so thank you, Dave.
Well, I mean, I'm a Christian, so a lot of texts has Jesus with S apostrophe, like for possessive, and I don't like it.
Yeah, that's what made Jesus wept.
I'm not going to get into a whole theology discussion here. I'm just saying that is, I've seen both methods used because of reading, you know, commentary on scripture is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Anyway.
Chris's second law.
And one of them is objectively better than the other.
Chris's second law is, wasn't it like matter and investiture and whatever? It's all the same stuff.
You know, I didn't actually write down what Chris's second law was.
Yeah,
I probably highlighted it, so I can actually check right
now. Okay, the apostrophe thing was more important.
It really was. And we'll save it until Craig does his bullet points, because, yeah, he'll cover it. Then Dave writes a whole mess of stuff down that looks like physics math, but with magic. Yeah,
right. So we already know that... My first thought was that I wasn't sure if command or intent was equivalent to spiritual force. So with material, force is the rate of change of momentum. And I was thinking, well, maybe intent is momentum and a command is a force. So I wrote C equals D. I'm using N for intent. C equals DN over DT. And I was thinking about it further, and we know investiture is equivalent to mass. So is intent, does that make intent?
But bold of you to assume time is time, Dave.
I am assuming time is time. I was being sarcastic. So N equals IV, right? So what is N? Intent. So if intent is momentum, then that is investiture times whatever the equivalent of velocity would be. But I'm not sure what the equivalent of velocity would be in a spiritual sense. And then I started like doubling back. I was like, well, maybe intent is the force and command is displacement. But then like, I didn't really like that. So I went back to saying C equals DN over DT. So, and because intent seems like it would equate to momentum, like a spiritual force would be the rate of change of intent. But what would be displacement? Or yeah, so if I'm assuming time is time, then velocity would be the derivative of displacement with respect to time. But what would be the equivalent of spiritual displacement? Craig?
So are you trying to argue about the amount of investiture that's used for at any one given moment and what that is? Because there's how much investiture that you use and the effect that it happens to have on the physical, in the physical world.
I'm just, well, first I'm making the assumption that our formulae for material physics would have an exact correlation to investronomics. What did I call it? Investrodynamics.
I like that one.
Yeah.
I had a good word for it last week. Anyway, investodynamics. So anyways, if that's the case,
I don't think you can argue that, though. Because I think typically people who are using investiture are creating a physical force. So you still have force. Force is still a thing, and you can still measure it. I'm not sure what you would measure, because you'd have to, you need some kind of rate of conversion between investiture and the amount of force that you use. That I think, is the formula that you're missing. I don't think you can directly replace investiture and intent. Command and intent in your case.
I guess the reason I was doing it is because I was thinking of how translational physics correlates to rotational physics, and everything correlates one to one. Like translational physics, you have mass; rotational physics, you have moment of inertia; you have velocity; you have angular velocity, and so forth.
So one of our listeners did look it up in the copper mine. The second law of investiture, known as Chris's second law, the second law is that investiture cannot be created or destroyed, only changed in form.
Right.
I feel like we should have been able to intuit that.
This is just like matter cannot be created or destroyed.
Except in oxygen not included, right, where it is regularly.
except in video games.
I can destroy matter. I mean, I'm breathing in the oxygen right now. Where'd it go?
So when you breathe in oxygen, you're actually using it for energy, and then you're also combining it with carbon from the food that you eat, and that gets exhaled as carbon dioxide.
Also, about 70-ish percent of what you breathe in is neither of those things, and it is, in fact, nitrogen.
True facts.
Where's all the nitrogen go?
Right back out.
We don't use it for anything except diluting the oxygen so we don't burn our eyeballs out of our skulls.
Cheery. Yep.
Anyway, Dave tries to out-sigzle Nomad. And we covered that.
Yeah. I like it, though. I want more of this. I'm in.
I got to scroll Twitter, so that was fun. Rebecca's been here the whole time. She's hiding outside the door, and Ox noticed and Nomad didn't. In what I assume will become a running gag. Has already been a bit, but will only become more blatantly that as the book goes on. I hope, anyway. Brandon, have more running gags. Nomad, praise for a miracle. Way back at the beginning, Nomad put his spaceship plans together for a steam-powered rocket engine, which you can build those in oxygen not included. And in fact, I probably need to as like my next major project once I clean up all the stuff that's going bad right now in my colony that Tori got to see.
Yeah, well, listeners, this wasn't on the recording, propulsion. But before we started recording, Mike was showing me all of his stuff.
I was not showing her all of my stuff. I was showing her a teeny tiny portion of my base that happened to be on fire at the time.
It was a large and intimidating portion of apparently the end of this game that did not inspire me to start the beginning of it.
Where did the fire come from?
Actually, fun story, there is no fire in Oxygen Not Included.
Well, there can't be. If they don't include oxygen, they couldn't possibly include fire, right?
There wasn't fire. There was just excess heat that needed to go
There was a lot
somewhere.
Of excess heat. that was a problem and continues to be. Anyway, yeah, Nomad made...
Do you need oxygen for fire, or do you just need, like, some kind of gas? You
need something combustible.
Yeah, it's usually oxygen, though.
Fire itself is using an oxygen as part of its process, right? The chemical process.
I think I've demonstrated I know more about physics than chemistry, so...
No, you know more about investor dynamics.
Anyway, this is why Project Hail Mary is actually a much more terrifying book than it originally purports itself to be. Investinautics. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, that was it was Investinautics was the
Which means there's room for a whole separate study of investor dynamics.
Yeah.
Because the inside of the ship of the ship the Project Hail Mary, or actually the ship the Hail Mary, the project is also cut. Anyway, is a 100% oxygen environment at a low density. So, like, a spark and boom. Anyway, Nomad...
Oh, wait, hang on. Investinautics is what's making the ship fly, but investor dynamics is all of this math that Dave has put on the screen for us. They both exist.
Mm. How does investor dynamic lighting come into play?
I don't know. I'm not an investor dynamic expert.
Investod engineer.
Ooh.
Anyway, Nomad made made schematics for a steam engine spacecraft, and so now he's gonna go. He's talking to someone about like, hey, how do we build this? And then he prays for a miracle because they will need it to not die. And then he gets to meet the ancestors.
I was cracking up at that bullet point yesterday.
It's a good one. Which ends our chapter. I don't think we get an explanation of who they are until the next chapter, right? I don't remember.
Mm.
As firmly established, I remember stuff that happened in the chapters I read this week. I don't remember individual chapter things. That's Dave's job.
This week. Okay, 22nd of the Sunlit Man, the reliquary, which I think is the same, it's the same root of where we get the word relic, right?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I never hadn't heard the word reliquary before, but I was like, oh.
Have you not seen Hellboy?
No.
You should see Hellboy.
Okay.
I feel like there's a lot of movies Dave needs to see.
All right. If only someone could harness the power of this place and compress it into the form of a gun controlled by Aeon Dorr.
Hmm. No,
who's
seems
in the
unlikely.
Picture? Who's in the picture? Is that Aux? Oh, it's Zeal. When did he get here? He was in the illustration before he was introduced in the words, or I didn't see that he was already there the whole time.
He was here the whole time.
A la Sam Raish.
In my head, Zeal is now played by Sam Raish. Thanks, Dave.
All right, future good. Casting.
I'll take it. Oh, we could... The chorus is like copper mines. These aren't the first people we've seen keep a shade as a pet. Didn't Silence, like, keep her mom in a cupboard or something?
She sure did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, that's where I keep my ghosts.
All right. Edit it so that I laugh after I say this. Machina ex Deus.
Yep, I got it.
Machine in the god.
I wonder if this is how replicators work in Star Trek or Subnautica?
Well, Subnautica, it's 3D printing. It's just taking some titanium and goes... Zip, zip.
Does it make that noise?
It's like...
Okay.
Maybe Dave could do it.
Craig? I would like to pose a theory to you. What if the Star Trek replicators don't actually make things themselves? They send an order to a central replicator, which is basically a 3D printer that can do everything, and then transports it to that replicator.
I think that's... Isn't that what fans have decided is happening?
Especially I don't know.
Now that we know 3D printers are a thing, I feel like that matches up.
I mean, just think about how transporters work. They basically turn energy into matter, right?
Although, I guess we don't know what it looks like. But haven't they delivered replicators to other civilizations? In which case, I don't know how big that would be. It would basically be a giant printer, 3D printer container, and then it just, you know, teleports, spits out the item in whatever the receptacle is.
Yeah, I'm imagining like the core thing. You actually need a fairly big thing, and it needs a pretty significant power source, a la a starship engine. But then, yeah, it makes the thing and then transports it.
But my point is, why would it make the thing somewhere else and then transport it, whereas the function of transporting it is one extra step up from just replicating it in the first place? So, like, if you make it, like, at the hub, then you break it down into energy and then send that pattern somewhere else to recreate the matter. Like, you don't need to make it over here, break it down, then rebuild it over here. You just need the pattern to create it over here.
So you're saying that I could just make my own Thomas Riker?
Yeah. That's my problem.
That'll never work.
With teleporters in the first place, because they're just rearranging matter based on whatever blueprint that it happens to scan. And so, yeah, replicators are the same exact thing. And it's just taking...
I think they actually...
You just have a bunch of carbon and metals, and like that's all you need. If you have access to that, you can teleport them in and just put them into a pattern that makes sense.
Somewhat related, did any of you guys ever read Timeline by Michael Crichton?
I sure did. No. I remember it being not great.
It's not great, but the... you're reminding me of the time travel, not the mechanic. It's been a while since I read it, so bear with me. But basically, they were like, okay, like what it does is it just takes a one molecule wide slice of your body, and then it rebuilds it, you know, like rebuilds your body one molecule slice at a time. And mostly it works. Every now and then it skips a molecule, but it's okay because it's only one molecule wide, and so it all comes out all right, unless it happens too many times, and then we start getting into horror movie territory. It was a huge part of the plot that they left out of the movie. I was really disappointed about that part because I was like, this is what's gonna make that movie cool. Mm-mm, they just left it out altogether.
Well, I mean, the book didn't mention Paul Walker even once. So, you know, there's some adaptation woes there. Zeal orders... Oh, no. Dave, was that the whole chapter?
Zeal orders something not entirely unlike Spicy. Experiment time!
Okay. We got way off track. The Reliquary. So Nomad goes to visit the Chorus, which is a whole bunch of spooky ghosts. These are the Threnody cognitive shadows that are apparently what happens to anyone from Threnody when they die, unless it's under very specific circumstances, such as getting all blowed up by the sun. And they're all in a big old jar, and they're being all ghosty-ghost, and they don't have individual personalities, and they can remember the history of their people, and then they threaten to kill everybody, and that's just kind of how they do. Also, they can just build stuff. You show them a picture of how the thing should be built, and they just build it. How's it work? I don't know. Ghosts. Except it's probably the same mechanics as the spirits from Yumi. And I'm irritated that this book made something from Yumi relevant.
Oh, I thought you liked it in the end. Except for the very end.
No, he started to like it, and then it did that info dump and lost him again.
Yeah.
The
Chorus is like copper mines. I covered that. They know they can repeat the history of their people. Which I have a question. Are the people on this planet, which is named
Canticle?
Are these all the Threnodites? Like, is this everyone from Threnody just moved?
No.
Okay.
There's a splinter group of people from Threnody that somehow got to this planet.
Okay, because that was unclear from what I read.
My understanding of what happened on Threnody is that there was a massive disaster, thanks to the ambition being shattered, and people were fleeing for their lives, and some people were stuck on the planet, in the werewolves and witches planet, And some people were able to get away. And this is some of the people that got away. I don't know if it's all the people that got away, but some of them got away.
Okay.
I think that this was explained, maybe it wasn't too clear, but there was a part where someone mentions that Beacon was a subgroup from another subgroup.
Yeah, the Beacon were part of the Cinder King's group, and then the Cinder King got power and started abusing said power.
Right. So the what was the Cinder King's? I forget what his place
Sorry,
was
Cider
called,
King.
But,
Cider King.
But yeah. So they're like, oh, we broke off of this group of people that broke off of the people from Threnody.
I think everyone on the planet are Threnodites.
Yes, that was made clear at this point between Nomad being able to speak to the Cinder King folks and yeah, this backstory we're getting now. I just wasn't sure if like the timeline of Threnody was like, okay, the evil happened. Everybody fled to the other continent. We call it Hell. It has forests and ghosts and spooky stuff. And then everybody from there got real tired of dealing with all of that, or the evil came back or something. And so everybody fled to another planet, and it was this one, and it's worse.
Well, so they're aware of the evil. They're aware of Hell. Well, they call it Hell, and that's the witches and werewolves planet. So they're at least aware of it, and therefore they must have fled it. But I don't think everyone fled it.
Yeah. Some anyway.
Just try to deal with it.
Yeah. These aren't the first people we've seen keep a shade as a pet. Yes, you're right. Silence keeps her mom, or her grandma. I think it was her grandma, right?
I don't remember.
One of those two. Some parental figure that was horrible to her. But she keeps it in the cupboard with the fine silverware, because that's how you do.
Unless you keep your ghosts in a jar.
Well, that's for Slay the Spire. That's great. Yeah. You save those for boss fights, ideally. I wonder if this is how replicators work in Star Trek or Subnautica. We covered that thoroughly. Zeal orders something not entirely unlike Spicy. Yeah, Zeal is in the room. He's been there the whole time. And he's like, hey, man, this is going to take a little while. Do you want some food or something? And Nomad's like, yes, anything that you can possibly get me as spicy as it possibly can be. And Zeal's all like, I don't know what that means. So Nomad becomes sad again. He's like, we'll just bring me whatever.
They apparently have good alcohol here, though.
And then finally...
You forgot...
What?
You forgot Machina X Deus.
Oh, Machina X Deus. Yeah. The machines are... They make stuff. The ghosts?
In the god.
The ghosts make stuff, so they're the machine. Yeah.
Machine in the two.
Experiment time! I believe at this point, Nomad's like, hey, let's blow something up.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I just made this engine, and it never works the first time.
Yeah. In engineering, you always test, and then you test again. And even if you think it passed, you still do another test. Guys, it's never going to work. Program.
And sometimes after you test it and it passes and then it passes again and again, and then you go into the actual use and then it breaks.
Yeah, management isn't going to like all the testing, but it's just a fact of the matter that it doesn't work the first time. I was coding something and I'm like, it's not going to work like the first time. I don't expect any of my code to work the first time, but it worked the first time. And I'm like, what did I do wrong?
So, that actually happened to me last week.
In all seriousness,
I was adding a save function to a tracker I was making for like entrance randomizers. And I did such a good job on being thorough on the original JSON format that creating the save files was actually like super duper easy.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect it to be. I was like, oh, wow, I really thought ahead on this. Like whenever I wrote this a year ago. I did not expect this to be this easy to add in the save function.
Yeah, in all seriousness, you don't expect things to pass the first time. Not saying it can happen. Just write some good tests. Make sure. There's a life lesson from me to you.
So, with the next chapter's bullet points, No, don't scroll yet. I'm hoping that Dave made a Homer Hickam reference.
Oh, I will now.
Okay, go ahead and scroll.
All right, 22th of...
No,
nope. Oh, we did that
scroll
one,
right? Down. There you go.
23th of the Sunlit Man. Explosion time. 7 sunlit hours remain. Guys, wouldn't this book make a great Majora's Mask-alike?
It's like just, you have one the sun day is to just always, game.
Yeah, and then it's just always, always, that. It'll just, it fluctuates from 7 hours to, I guess it goes up to 20 hours, so 20 hours, depending on how far ahead or behind you are in your rotation.
Yeah, I still never made Nomads. Any actual, like, progress in that game. Could not figure out
Nomads
what
first.
To Sorry, Dave.
Nomads' first attempt was okay, but will they have enough time to iterate the experiment enough to get a functional engine?
There you go.
Enter Solemnity Divine, Deus Ex Machinist. 90% is more than a nudge, Nomad. Nomad doesn't need air to breathe. He's lived in a vacuum. That must suck. Maybe he's referring to wit's vacuity.
Oh.
Don't waste your breath explaining breaths. Homer Hiccup is the best.
That's the reference Michael's looking. Look at how satisfied he looks right now.
Okay, someone besides Dave, what was the name I said?
Homer Hickam?
Yeah, that's the guy. And you know who he is, right? Like, everyone knows who he is.
I'm looking him up now.
Really?
He's a rocket boy.
Yeah.
Former NASA engineer.
Never seen Astro Boy.
Train Japanese astronauts.
They did a whole semi-autobiographical movie.
Oh.
Jake Gyllenhaal was Homer Hickam. He was one of the first American rocket engineers.
That, and he has, like, best-selling books about rocket and science trainers. And stuff.
Helped found NASA and start the U.S. space program.
Hi.
Had a hand in JPL.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Ada.
Nighty-night.
Nighty-night, Ada.
This is the part where he throws the baby, and he throws the baby.
If you would like to watch Craig hurl a child.
She's excited. Look at how excited she is.
She likes it.
You can join us in our live recordings by going to patreon.com/CosmereCast and throw us some money. If you don't want
to
see
the way that Craig is throwing the baby.
Yeah.
Okay, for the record, she is being thrown into a giant beanbag pillow thing. She's fine.
Craig, a large adult man. Is flinging a child into the air.
Not flinging.
And not catching her. He does not catch her.
God. You're making me sound like the worst parent.
And if you would like to see this and collect evidence for your inevitable lawsuit, patreon.com/CosmereCast and come join us on our live recordings. If you want to just join the Discord, no need to give us money, but we would like it if you did. Dave, you have more?
Homer Hiccup is the best. Did Rock name all these people?
Sorry, who?
Q. All right, let's go around the horn, and we'll say one syllable at a time. New.
Moo.
Moo. I was there first.
All right, we'll go clockwise on my screen. So me, then Tori.
I can't see.
Just Mike, then Craig.
Just say it.
Yeah, I'm saying. All right, new. Tori. Moo? Mike.
Oh God,
Nubu,
this is hard.
Huku, Maki, Aki, Isla, Lunamore.
I can do the whole thing. So I can't do that. Like, you want me to repeat the alphabet backwards? No, just give me a ticket
for
a DUI.
For
like,
Tori,
I'm just not gonna be able to do that.
Okay, let's see if just Dave and I can do it. Just Dave and I. All right.
Nu,
Mu,
Hu,
Ku,
Ma,
Ki,
A,
Ki,
I,
A,
Lu,
Na.
Yay!
We did it.
So he goes by Lunamore, but this is like a...
That's just a name he lets airsick lowlanders call him.
Sure. But this is like a Japanese where you have... Oh, but it's constant syllable, or constant vowel. The Aki Aya Lunamore is throwing me off. There's an apostrophe. What does the apostrophe mean? Why do
it
we have to throw apostrophes?
It means it's a fantasy novel.
Ugh.
Thanks a lot,
okay.
Tolkien.
Sorry, side note
on apostrophes and names.
There is something I appreciate about Sanderson is that I like the unique curses and swear words that he comes up with for, you know, his different mm-hmm. books. Like I that is a part of world building that I really enjoy.
That and not a Brando original.
Well, I appreciate that he does it because when I'm reading other books and they just default to, you know, English swear words, I'm like, that it's not original to me. And I'm like, I don't want to read this, but you throw a Shades in there or Storms or something like that. I'm like, oh.
We're going to have to bleep this out. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, listeners.
No, he got it from Jordan. Did Jordan come up with it on his own or pull it from someone else? I'm not really sure, but Brandon definitely picked it up from Jordan.
Speaking of picking it up, we've just crossed the hour mark in this episode.
But we're having a good time, so hopefully it's going by fast.
Speaking of picking it up and having a... Speaking of picking it up and having a good time, ska.
Good thing I looked up... Can't read that. Patini? Patina?
Patina.
Patina. So it's the stuff that, like, grows on the Statue of Liberty. Or something.
The mold?
It's, No, like when the copper oxidizes and creates like this green layer.
Oh, the rust, stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So, in chapter 21, Brandon used the word patina, and, well, I had it on my Kindle, so I just had to press the word to see what it meant, and I was like, okay, that's like the stuff that grows on the Statue of Liberty, and it was referring to his facial hair. Maybe he only had a half patina at the time, I don't remember. And then here it's being used to refer to, like, his jadedness. And jade is also green. Coincidence? Yes. Contemplation suggests transferring heat into an alive sun heart. What possible danger could there be in placing investiture into an inanimate object? Mm. Smiley, smiley, smiley. And that's it.
There's no danger, Dave. Only,
I mean, it just sounds to me like the way the method of getting the best character in the Cosmere.
Only it's based on the command that you use. So if you have a proper command, as we've seen Vivenna do, you can get something that doesn't just want to destroy all the evil in the world. I mean, it's fine.
I mean, it's just the whole rogue, not rogue, but hyper-literal AI trope, right?
Yeah, that's definitely Nightblood in a nutshell.
Yeah.
All right, explosion time. As promised, Nomad's space bike explodes. He did tell them that would happen, and they're still sad and disappointed by it, and they're like, oh, well, I guess because that exploded, we're all still dead. And he's like, well, hold on. This was supposed to explode. The first one never works. What you do is you build it, you take an idea, you try it out, you find out what the problems are, you build a new model to solve those problems... You test that out, you find out what the new problems are that you've created by solving the previous problems, etc., etc. Also, we have 7 hours to do this, so I'm a go find smart people. And he does. And so he gives them the schematics, and the biggest thing he gives them is the concept, because without like the base concept, they just had no idea this was even possible. Nomad does not need air to breathe, as established, people with enough investiture don't need air to breathe. They don't need to breathe. They can just burn up some pews instead of breathing. Keeps them alive. Nomad does not explain breaths. I think this was in reference to him talking to Rebecca about them trying to like fill one of them energy doodads. Which is the word for that is on here somewhere. I think we need to scroll down. Sunheart, thank you. One of them energy doodads. And she's like, well, we've tried filling that up with our own energy, and it never works. And he's like, well, of course it doesn't work. You only have, like, maybe two pews at most. But he doesn't say that. He just thinks it. Or he says it to Ox. So basically the same thing. Homer Hickam is the best. Indeed he is. And I hope you learned something,
yeah.
Dave.
Yeah, I learned that his name isn't Homer Hiccup.
It indeed is not.
I appreciate that we tried to get Dave to stealth out of his bullet points. It worked wonderfully.
Did Rock name all these people? We covered that.
Who?
No.
No time.
Good thing I looked up Patina during chapter 21. So fun thing about Patina, it is also what develops on old coins. So it's like the wear and any sort of dirt that's accumulated, oils from hands from touching them. If you want to try to sell old coins that you think are valuable, do not clean them. Collectors want to know what happened to that coin, and the patina is the best way to find that out. Also, if you try to clean them, you will damage them. You don't know what you're doing. So get them graded by an expert, and then... If someone who is smarter than you decides they should be cleaned, take them to an expert to get them cleaned.
I think the same can be said about valuable artwork.
And
don't
jewelry and stuff.
Don't try to restore it. You can't draw Jesus's face. You don't know what you're doing. Mm. Don't do it.
Okay, that is for our listeners who are from 10 years ago. I don't know how you're listening to this now, but welcome.
And don't go from being in a symphony orchestra and playing the cello to restoring old paintings. That's not a career move that makes sense. Those are two highly specialized careers that require years of training to do either.
But if you have a real passion for restoring painting,
well then,
and you just like, you've only ever got into the cello because your dad made you,
then do the painting restoring thing. They both take years of focused attention and practice to get good enough to do it professionally. There is not time in a person's life to do both at the age that Sigourney Weaver was between Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2. Contemplation suggests what? Transferring heat into an alive Sunheart.
Did you say something about focusing?
Yeah, so Nomad tried to do this with a dead Sunheart and then had it explained, oh yeah, you need to use one that's not all empty and stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, because it's really hard to put investiture into something that's dead. That makes sense. And so...
And he thinks it might be dangerous somehow, too.
I mean, it could be. There's definitely no examples available to anyone, especially from Roshar around the same time that Sigzel was there. There are no immediate examples that come to mind.
All right. 24 of the Sunlit Man. Transfer of pew, take two. Who's anti-investiture? Terrible. Rebecca confirmed, weighs less than 2,000 pounds. Nomad accidentally cures 2, elegy.
2,000 pounds.
Oops. Her soul is terribly compromised. That usually makes it easier to control or infiltrate a mind. This reminds me of...
Click on it.
Who do you think I wrote here?
Click
who
on it.
Who do you think I wrote here? Tori, what do you think? I want you guys to guess.
Vin? Well, that's not... Vin doesn't fit there, though.
It might. He might have added spaces just to mess with us.
Put spaces. That's in true. Might have made it a really tiny font, and it could be a really long one.
But I feel like if it's Dave, it would be someone else, and he's trying to make a joke here.
I bet it's preservation, and he wrote it real tiny to make it fit in the box.
All right. That sounds like you give up.
Yeah.
The answer is Seth.
Seth.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth. Soul terribly compromised. Makes it easier to control his mind. Either that or he just, like, believed in a lie his whole life. I don't know.
No, he's not controlled, though. Like, he's just he's just following his oaths.
Oath stone.
Yeah, he's just really good at following the oath stone. Like, really good. Scary good.
Nomad sticks a sun sliver into his blood. Click!
Is that what it sounds like?
We'll have to find out in chapter 25.
Because I feel like if it will...
Oh,
it might make a sound similar to opening up a flesh pouch to grab an ATM.
Oh no! Oh, I hope Dave is editing this one so that he has to censor his own schlorp noise.
I didn't even make the noise.
But you're thinking about it.
But he's thinking about it.
Thinking about it.
Transfer of pew. Take two. Yeah, with an alive Sunheart, he tries it again. And is able to suck most of the soul juice out of Elegy. And surprise, surprise, she can talk now. But...
Wow.
But she's still very, very angry and violent. And has no memories. And really doesn't like being chained to a wall. And yeah.
Understandable.
Who's anti-investiture? Nomad asks Ox if what's in the Sunheart now is anti-investiture, because it's got a weird film to it.
Is it a little purple? A little violent?
It looks not great.
Violent.
And he's wanting to play with this with himself, so injecting anti-investiture into his own soul juices would be bad.
Yeah.
Rebecca confirmed, weighs less than 2,000 pounds. You sure you don't mean 1,000 kilograms?
Well... The term ton was used, not metric ton. What is a metric ton?
1,000 kilograms.
One
isn't that
metric.
Just a megagram? Why don't they just call that a megagram?
You probably can, but...
Anyway.
No, that's a ton, which translates into imperial pounds to about 2,200. Round that down, you get about 2,000. That's where imperial tons came from.
Wait, imperial tons came from the metric system and then deciding not to use the metric system? And make up a new number?
Yeah, it's terrible.
So, yeah, I think bushel. He says something like, Rebecca tried to, like, knock him over with all her force, but it wasn't a ton or something. She was like, oh, she was hanging on with all of her force, but which wasn't a ton, but still, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, well, she doesn't weigh 2,000 pounds. That'd be a ton.
Yeah. Nomad accidentally cures Elegy. Oops. Yeah, we covered that. Her soul is terribly compromised. That usually makes it easier to control or infiltrate a mind. Yeah, so being cinderfied basically gave Cinder King the ability to aim her with mental commands, as he does all of his cinderfied folks. And by cinder, I mean cider.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that I remember Rebecca's here, she's like, oh, what are you doing to my sister? Arr, rawr. And then after he siphons off the Sun Heart, on the scarred soul onto the Sun Heart, she's like, oh, why didn't you just say you were trying to cure her? And Nomad's like, oh yeah, I guess figuring out how to cure myself by trying to cure Elegy inadvertently cured Elegy.
Well, sort of. And then Nomad sticks a sun sliver into his blood. Yeah, so he is trying to basically do this same thing with his own soul juices, but he wants to try just a little tiny bit at a time instead of all of it, because bad. He also doesn't have a proper connection, so he's like, all right, what if I dip it into my blood juices? That'll work. It doesn't work. And then click is, Elegy's chains get removed by Rebecca, and then Elegy promptly plays Nomad's head like a basketball against the metal plates of the floor. But that's probably next chapter.
Wait, are they setting up like a don't cross the stream situation? Like, oh, don't put the sliver into your soul juice, and then like at the very end of the book, it's going to be like, all right, time to cross the soul juice with the sliver genes, and that's how he's going to win the final battle.
Could be. I don't know.
Okay.
I think he's going to win the final battle by... he'll probably just have Ox turn into a really big shield again. That seems like a good way to win. Yeah.
25th of the Sunlit Man. Well, that was pointless. Well, okay, it was kind of pointful. He's a nomad when it comes to work, too. I'm not sarcastic. I'm just being extra clear. Explosion 2.
Yeah, so the sun sliver into the arm thing didn't work, because he doesn't have enough connection. Also, he gets just the bejesus beaten out of him by Elegy before he...
Yeah, this was... I thought it was like, well, it's kind of pointless, you know, to release Elegy and then, like, immediately lock her back in. But there was actually a story purpose / lore fill-in kind of reason, which... I think was maybe just to, I don't remember, maybe to demonstrate that she still had, like, all the energy and stuff.
Yeah, she still...
She has a lot of potential violence, and it wants to turn into kinetic violence.
She has a bunch of investiture, and as we remember from Kaladin, when you're filled up with Stormlight, you want to move. And so she wants to move, and by move, we mean murder Nomad
right,
in the face.
That's the intent of whatever is charged her.
Yeah. So yeah, she gets locked back up, and he's a nomad when it comes to work, too. I don't actually know what that means.
Well, because he's constantly moving from one task to another and not staying on one thing for a long period of time.
Okay. He's also down to 8% pews!
That's right, that was, okay, thank you. That was the reason that it had impact on the story, because he had to use some of his bew to resist Elegy.
Well, to heal up from all the concussions. Ox is not sarcastic.
Something like that.
Ox is just being extra clear. Ox said sarcastically. And explosion 2! So they iterate a new version of the space motorcycle, and it also blows up. But it shows where there are different stresses from solving the original problem. So now we get to solve more problems and create more problems and solve more problems and hopefully get it all done before the ticking clock is done and everyone dies. End of...
Why don't they just stop making the clock?
End of chapter. Because without a clock, you've got a moon with a scary face in it that just crashes down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then Wit shows up and plays his flute and time goes backward.
Wait, is Skull Kid Wit? Oh, no.
Accurate.
I was All right, what you got for us, Craig?
We have been recording for an hour and 22 minutes, so I'm good.
You didn't have any bullet points, Craig?
I mean, I do, but we're good.
Catch him next week.
Next week.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Okay. Well, Mike told us how he thinks the final battle's going to go. Dave, what you think?
He's going to cross the Sunhard into the bloodstreams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good theories. All right. Does anyone have anything else to add before we call it a night?
No.
Okay. Well, that's an episode. All right.
No. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Good night, Internet.
Bye.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.